Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Spartan Life Radio, brought to you by Norfolk State University, home of the mighty Spartans. Spartan Life Radio was created with you in mind. It's your source for news and information about NSU matters, including students, faculty, staff, administrators, alumni, and the communities we serve.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, all you listeners out there in Blog Talk Radio land. Welcome to Spartan Life Radio, the radio station via Blog Talk Radio that's all about the Spartan Nation. The U.S. Department of Education recently awarded Norfolk State University with a $1.1 million grant for education majors. The grant, which runs through 2020, will support 140 pre-service teacher education candidates and will be administered through the School of Education. NSU School of Education has been preparing competent, compassionate, and committed leaders since 1970. We're talking about the training of the next generation of teachers, principals, and administrators in education on this episode of Spartan Life Radio. Thank you for joining us. I'm Sharon Hoggart from the Office of Communications and Marketing, and I'm your host. Our guest today is Dr. Leon Rousen, Associate Professor in the School of Education. According to Dr. Rousen, who's also a principal investigator with this grant, this newest grant will provide education majors with mentoring and tutoring, but will also equip them with financial literacy and test-taking skills and pay for the professional tests and organization fees. Dr. Rousen says the end result produce very highly qualified teachers. Welcome, Dr. Rousen, to Spartan Life Radio.
Thank you.
All right. For our guest, if you have a question about today's topic, you can call us at area code 347-850-8515. That number again, area code 347-850-8515. Just follow the prompts to speak to our guest. Since 1970, the School of Education has provided the leadership, coordination, and evaluation of all teacher education programs at the university. The School of Education's central purpose is to provide pre-service and in-service educational programs to prospective teachers, in-service teachers, administrators, and other professionals engaged in educational activities in other agencies. The School of Education offers courses of instruction through its three departments: early childhood, elementary education, special education, health and physical education, and exercise science, secondary education, and school leadership. We're going to jump into our interview. Tell us a little bit about your background and your length of service at Norfolk State University.
Okay, well, my background, I started as a public school teacher in North Carolina, so I've been in teacher education, that whole business, for over 30 years. So, my background, my experiences, my knowledge, my passion is in teacher education. And that's what I do now here at Norfolk State University in the Department of Early Childhood, Elementary, and Special Education. So I'm preparing candidates to become highly qualified teachers.
And how long have you been with NSU?
I've been at NSU for about 12 years now in the School of Education.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize you had been at the university that long. That's wonderful. Committed faculty. Okay, this latest grant is not the first time it's been awarded to NSU, correct? And
correct.
I want you to connect the dots for us. When did we first receive the grant? And just connect the dots for our listeners.
Yeah, this is the second cycle. We first received the grant in 2010 from the United States Department of Education, Student Support Services, Teacher Prep, K-12. And as it was said before in the pre-announcement, it is to support teacher education majors at Norfolk State University, whether elementary education, math education, physical education, science education, business education, English education. We have a lot of different teacher education programs here at Norfolk University, and we're here to support about 140 students who are in those areas to get through our teacher education program. Our first cycle was $1 million from 2010 to 2015, and the second cycle is $1.1 million from 2015 to 2020. So
okay.
It has been extended another 5 years to support teacher education majors and to increase the number of highly qualified teachers, you know, in Virginia and throughout the country, even though a large majority of our teacher candidates do teach in the state of Virginia.
Okay. So is the how much money is provided each year? Is it the full $1 billion, or is it broken up into different phases of that money?
Yeah, it's broken up into 5 years. So we approximately operate on $220,000 per year for 5 years. So $220,000 per year to do all the things that we do for our students, from mentoring, tutoring, counseling, advisement, payment of all test fees and different registrations, cultural experiences, to make sure that they are prepared, ready, and able to get through our fully accredited teacher education program.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so as far as tests goes, I know you help prep these students to get ready to take the tests and other state licensure programs up in tests. So how are other state education majors doing these days compared to their peers on these state tests?
I think we are doing pretty much in line with other institutions. A lot of our peer institutions are dealing with and working with students who may have struggled taking the test the first time and providing support, and we do the same. So once we provide support and resources for them, our students do relatively well. So we are very much in line with other institutions, and other institutions are also trying to put in place support to help students get through all the testing. The testing is a very necessary evil, all the different licensure testing that we have, from Praxis 1 to Praxis 2 to VCLA to RVE. All of those is a quality measure. We think that teachers should be highly qualified, and teachers should, you know what they should know, just like any other profession, whether it be medicine or nursing or law, or engineering. I mean, those people are tested, and our profession also has to be, and our people have to be very highly qualified, and we have to assure that through different types of assessments. So it is a very necessary evil. I mean, some people feel like it's too much, but we have to, because we want the best teachers for our students, just like anyone who's selecting a doctor. I would not want a doctor who has not gone through all the rounds to become a highly qualified doctor. And I feel the same way about teaching and for our children who have to encounter these teachers.
So it's
critical.
Listen, if you'd like to join the conversation or you've got a question for Dr. Rousen, or you just want to listen in, call us at area code 347-850-8515. Press 1 on your telephone keypad if you want to talk to our guest. Dr. Rousen, have there been major changes over the years in how we train teachers and others in education?
Yes, it has. Even though I think it's good to understand that the basic foundation of teaching really hasn't changed in terms of supporting students, uplifting students, helping students to learn, helping them become productive citizens. That has been going on the last 50, 100 years in terms of the role of teachers. Now, how we implement it and how we carry it out and some of the changes in the world have impacted how we do it. One of the biggest ways that differences that we have found is diversity, is that we have to embrace diversity in terms of education and teachers and schools. We have to embrace diversity and differences of students, and not only do we have to embrace it, we have to accommodate it. Learning styles, learning differences, different backgrounds, races, ethnicity, we have to be able to manage and handle that now. And in our training, we provide best practices and activities and research to help our teacher candidates be able to deal with that in their classrooms and in their schools. And that's a change over when I was educated 35 years ago being a teacher. In my teacher education program, there was not a lot of push for diversity, because it was a different world. And another area that's very important that's changing education also is accountability. Teachers and schools now are accountable for their student learning and their student success and their student achievement. And we help students to understand
Dr. Ralston? Dr. Ralston? Oh, I think he dropped off. Dr. Ralston, are you still with us?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yeah, we hear you now. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Yes, and I said the second area is accountability. Did that go through?
Yeah, go ahead and repeat it because you stopped and cut you off right at you, when you said accountability cut you right off.
Oh, yes. I said another big area in terms of differences of schools and how we train teachers, we teach them to understand data-driven education and that they
mm-hmm.
are accountable for the success and learning and achievement of their students, and that we base that on data. And we base that on progress, and we base that on improvement of students. And that accountability is very important because now they are evaluated on how well their students do. That's a part of their evaluation. That's a part of their job credibility. And we help students in our education program to understand and take experiences in that. And when they do observations and participation in schools, we allow them to experience that even before they become teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something very different than 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm. What kind of impact has technology played on in the role of teaching prospective teachers?
Technology is a major piece in education now and will be in the future, as it relates to providing that. Allowing students to work at their own pace, allowing students to be engaged in education, allowing students to move at their own pace, and technology has helped us to do that in terms of teaching and learning. Technology is a very another big thing in teaching and learning is also online learning now. There are initiatives in
mm-hmm.
many states to where students are now being provided online education, particularly a lot of rural areas now. Rural areas or remote areas, they are getting online education, so they are not behind the eight ball in terms of getting anything that's offered in any other school district, in city school district, suburban school district, rich school districts, rural schools, and some other schools who may not have the resources are now using online instruction and technology to make sure their students are getting everything that they need to be competitive, not only in a national way, but in a global way. So it's critical to our educational system and the use of technology and how we use technology to promote and to make sure our students are up to speed and competitive.
Okay, so we've talked about the accountability factor and impact of technology. Have there been any other major changes in the business of education over the last 5 or 10 years?
Yes, one of the big things in the business of education is funding, and it's almost like we have to do more with less. And so what happens is when that happens, we have to rely on other resources. So educational systems, school districts, schools are now relying on outside sources like businesses, churches, other agencies to help fund and support education. And that's one of the biggest funding and being able to do things even without the regular state funding, but using these other resources to help promote, teaching and learning. And we're going to have to, use those resources. And I know in some communities, the church, schools are trying to engage the church more in the teaching and learning process. I mean, with tutoring, role models, resources, space, mentoring, using that as a source to help supplement what we do in schools already. That's a major
mm-hmm.
piece in the business of education now and in the future.
Does Norfolk State have any particular partnerships in the Norfolk community or in other Hampton cities where we send out maybe intern teachers or prospective teachers in classrooms outside of their student teaching stuff? Do we have any partnerships going on like that?
We do have partnerships with local schools And a lot of our partnerships are very, very, very direct. You know, like, for example, we have a partnership with Ruffner Middle School, and we're specifically working on increasing reading. And that partnership is putting our students, our teacher candidates, some of them who are very versed, they've taken teaching reading courses here, and they're actually working with teachers and students in that school to help increase their reading scores at Ruffner Middle School. And that's an outstanding partnership. This is one of the many partnerships that we have where we're having direct impact on student learning. And that's sort of one of the things that we have to show now, even in our School of Education accreditation, that we have to show that we're having an impact on student learning in K-12 in K-12 schools. We have to support that now in our accreditation process. So we have to have partnerships and be involved. And, of course, schools call different school systems, specific schools call us to ask for support in different in writing, in reading, in health and physical education activities. And so we're able to do that with our teacher candidates. And so they also get experience. So it's kind of like a win-win situation. We're supporting a school, a school district, but our students also get the benefit of getting experience out of that activity. So it's a win-win situation.
Dr. Welton, you've been in education for a long time, and I just wanted to ask you, what is going on in the classrooms of America today? Is something that we're doing wrong as parents, as guardians of children, to have them to be so disengaged in the classroom? We talked about diversity of ethnicities and the different cultures and backgrounds. Is something we're doing wrong as families, so these children are disengaged in the classroom.
I think what is happening is that in some ways, and I'm speaking in general, is that we have to catch up to where students are. And sometimes education, sometimes we do slightly lag behind. I'm talking about nationally, we sort of lag behind in terms of catching up with how society is. Our students come in very tech savvy. And they're used to being engaged. I mean, I think I read some report that the average middle-aged kid between 9 and 13, they spend over half of their awake time on digital devices. Okay, so when they are awake, half of their awake time, they're on digital devices, and then they go into a school, into a classroom, where it's mostly not engaged. A lot of it is just, teacher lecture, teacher doing most of the talking, and they're sort of not engaged. Mm-hmm. So it's very different from their life and how they live. I mean, and for some of them, it's a major adjustment. I mean, it's a major adjustment to spend most of your life on digital devices, and then when you go to school, it's very different. So we're going to have to catch up and to make sure that we are still engaging them, even in the process of teaching and learning, like they do outside of school already, so that they won't be disengaged and become bored in school, and not as motivated. So we have to catch up with that piece, and that's why I was talking earlier about how important technology is and how we have to allow students to be more engaged in the educational process, and technology is one of the ways to do that and to allow students to bring in devices. And these devices that they bring in, of course, would be in the name of teaching and learning. There are some school districts that allow students to bring in different digital devices and telephones, and they use it for educational purposes. And them being able to use those devices is a way of engagement. And there was some, there was a lot of pushback on that. Some teachers felt like, well, they shouldn't have devices. And some parents were saying they shouldn't have devices. But we almost have to do it in a very structural way to keep them engaged, that it will not be used for personal use during class. It will be used for educational purposes. But then we're catching up with them when we allow that and when we institute that in a very structured way. We're then engaging them. Mm-hmm. So I think out of it, students may be more engaged and maybe more motivated about school and teaching and learning.
Okay. Has there ever been a shortage of teachers in any state or municipality that you are aware of? I read somewhere that at one time there was a shortage of teachers. Is that still true?
Yes. There is a shortage of teachers, and nationwide and specifically some areas, math and science, there is a dire shortage of math and qualified math and science teachers in Virginia and across the country. And it's somewhat alarming because when you think about math and science and technology and engineering and some of those areas imply national defense areas. When you think about war and you think about national defense, a lot of national defense is stemmed around STEM and math and science and engineering. And if we don't have qualified teachers teaching that to our students, then we are going to fall behind, and we're going to become very vulnerable as it relates to national security if we are not creating the best minds in math, science, and technology as it relates to national defense. So it's a national defense issue. And so, and we're working on that. There are now STEM programs for elementary schools, STEM programs for high schools. We're now trying to recruit more students from high school to go into math and science education. We're trying to make sure we're producing qualified math and science teachers so it does not become a national security issue. But if we're not careful, it could easily become a national security issue if we don't have the brightest minds in some of the areas for national defense.
Okay. All right.
So,
and also
yes, there's
too,
a shortage. Yes.
Okay. I also read, too, a few years back that there is possibly a lack of black men in the field of education, especially in the classroom. Is that still true?
Yes. And there is a shortage of black male teachers, and that has been going on for a while now. And, you know, it's due to many of the social ills that are placed on black males in our country. Like, you know, the disproportionate amount placed in special education. We found that there are lack of role models for black males. We found that there's high suspension rates. We're finding that a lot of black males are engaging in gang activities. A lot of them are going to prison. A lot of them are killed. So those ills we got to work around and work with, but that's one of the main reasons why there are a shortage of black male teachers and also a shortage in a lot of other professions as well because of some of the social ills that surround black males that I think we're trying to work on as a country, as a nation, as a community, and even as an institution.
But is it still true, too, that it's a lack of not only black men, but men in general because of the pay for teachers and educators?
Yes, I think pay is an issue or could be an issue for black males. But the interesting piece about that is that in terms of, and this is an interesting note to put, in terms of black males who are in education, many of them have moved into administration. Many of them have been teachers, and they move into principalship, superintendents, and a lot of them in terms of pay scale are some of the highest paid African-Americans, black males in their communities. So that in itself is not really the reason. So it's really interesting that a lot of the black males in school system are some of the highest paid people in their communities and in their states. Because, like I said, many of them have become principals and superintendents and assistant superintendents. So it's something deeper than the money piece, that there's something else that's missing. There is a program called Call Me Mister. It's a national program where they focus on trying to recruit and prepare African-American males to become teachers. So there are efforts out there to increase the number of black males to go into teaching. But in terms of financially, there are a lot of opportunities financially for black males who go into teaching over time.
Okay.
Yes, there is.
Okay. Well, do you have any predictions about the future of training educators and on what the classroom of the future might look like?
I think the classroom of the future is going to be very, very, very specific. And what I mean by specific, I think it's going to have to focus on the current job market. I mean, we're going to have to prepare students not just in a general way. We're going to have to prepare students specifically for job markets that are out there and available at that time. So it can't just be traditional. Mm-hmm. It's like, to me, traditional education is that, you know, this is just going to be general education. That's going to become a thing of the past in future schools. It's going to be based on focused job markets, college and career readiness for the future jobs. With that said, there has to be more individualized instruction also, individualized instruction for students based on their interests and based on the real job market. So one thing we're going to see, which I think is very interesting, we're already seeing at the university, there's going to be more online education for K through 12.
Mm-hmm.
And the use of technology.
Okay.
And the reason there's going to be more online education is because all school districts will not be able to provide all of these different programs, you know, within their school district. They're going to have to rely on online education, where Norfolk State may be able to provide instruction on certain areas to high school students in nursing,
mm-hmm.
or community colleges will be involved in that, and students in high school will be able to take online courses that we offer for high school students as we prepare them for college and career readiness. That's really going to be the big future of education.
Okay. All right, Dr. Ross, so we're about at the end of this episode. Any last thoughts before we close the broadcast? Anything that you want to add? Any takeaway messages for our listening audience?
Yes, I think it's very important, and this is one thing that we teach also in teacher education, that we teach and we try to model, is that relationships are very important in terms of teacher and students, teacher and parents, teacher and community. Relationships are very important. Students are motivated by relationships, you know, getting to know them, find out who they are, because there's so much diversity that we really, as a teacher, as we prepare teachers, we train them that you have to find out who your students are, and they need to know who you
mm-hmm.
are, and you develop strong professional relationships with your students because it's motivating. You know, James Comer, who's an outstanding, renowned child psychologist, says that no significant learning can take place without a significant relationship. And we sort of tell our students that. And then George Washington Carver, a great, outstanding, historic African-American scientist, states that all learning is understanding relationships. So relationships are very, very important in teaching and learning. And I think we all just sort of need to understand that. And that same relationship is also true with parents and their children, community and their children, churches and their children. All this relationship thing is very important in us trying to, lift up our children and to improve student achievement.
Okay, wonderful. Well, we want to thank you again for taking time to join us today. It was great talking to you, and this exciting program going on in the NSU School of Education. All right, guys, for more information on NSU School of Education, visit nsu.edu and click on the Academics tab. Again, thank you all for joining us on this issue of Spartan Life Radio. Spartan Life Radio airs on Thursdays at 6 p.m. For a complete list of Spartan Life Radio topics, visit blogtalkradio.com/SpartanLife. Get social NSU and follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Visit nsu.edu for more information on today's topic, special events, and happenings at the university. Listen to this broadcast or others on demand at blogtalkradio.com/SpartanLife. I'm Sharon Hoggart. Until next time, peace.